Hi everybody, Adam here, just quickly checking in before we start the podcast to say that if you run or own or work for a business that would like to target thousands upon thousands of engaged football fans with a product or a brand message, then get in contact because Grand Old Team is the leading destination for fans of Everton Football Club. We have opportunities to leverage our huge platform, including video and this very podcast. So if you'd like to speak to us to see how we might be able to help you and your business, email us on hello@grandoldteam.com.
And now Horn. Stewart wants it. And looks for Amakechi!
It's a grand old team to play for. It's a grand old team to support. And it, you know, your history. It's enough to make your heart go whoa.
Hello there and welcome back to the Grand Old Team podcast, another drab performance with a draw against West Brom at home. Ironic cheers heard inside Goodison Park after we finally have a shot on target. Theo Walcott gets chills coming out to Zed Cars and then ends his 475-day assist drought. We'll look back on his first start. Umar to the rescue again and a sickening leg break for James McCarthy, who might just be one of the most unluckiest footballers ever. All of this and more in today's Grand Old Team podcast. So I'm joined by the ever-present Dave the Rave, Brewdog Brandon, advocate and all-round decent grand old team comrade. It's Monsieur Groucho. How are you, my man? You okay?
I put one extra chilli on my tea. I just emptied the packet, basically. Thought, oh, these will be all right. These won't be that hot. And I've blown the gob off myself.
What did you have for tea, though?
It was a chicken and bacon salad with chilies, which I thought were mild, and they weren't mild. So, I'm recovering.
Are you drinking?
Not tonight. I'm in work tomorrow.
Okay, so no Brewdog tonight.
Not tonight. Wait for a weekend for that one.
You're a good lad, Dave, aren't you? Not drinking on a school night. Okay.
No, couldn't. It's the feeling in work. I couldn't be dealing with that anymore. Not to say I've never done it, but in my younger days, you know.
Yeah,
but they are well gone.
Yes, I know the feeling. And as some of you may have seen, our new guest on Countdown, he also writes in the Huffington Post and is the man behind the EFC Stato Curtain, making his debut like Theo, but this guy has definitely fulfilled his promise. See what I did there? It's Bradley Cates. Welcome to Grand Old Team, Brad.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on, mate. It's fantastic to have you on. I know that a lot of Evertonians really like that EFC Stato account, and I noticed that Jamie Carragher gives you a follow.
Yeah, we never really chatted, but he has retweeted and favorited a few of my tweets in the past, so nice to know that I'm in his good books.
I don't know if you know, but I'm not in his good books. We did a derby preview last season, and I went to Anfield and had a nice chat with him. And then at the end, I was giving him presents on behalf of Evertonians, Brad, and I gave him a picture of Gerrard falling over in front of Denver Bar. So I'm very lucky that he didn't chin me. But I wondered, you know, if he's following the EFC Stato account. Obviously, the obvious reason for that is because he's a pundit and he needs to know what's going on. But also, you know, that kind of does vindicate people who say that he is still a blue, doesn't it?
Yeah. just a bit.
Yeah. So anyway, as I said, thank you for coming on, and we've got loads to talk about today, lads. A lot of it is pretty negative, but we'll start with you then, Grouch. So another poor performance, probably best to start with the lineup. Just how surprised, on a scale of 1 to really, really shocked, were you that Vlasic just came in and started randomly?
It was just, if they're going to play the lad, give him a few games on the run. You can't just throw him in there randomly, I think. I actually thought, oh, that's a cracking great starting lineup. That's a good positive one. You know, it'll be going forward a lot. And then we saw turgid football. So, I was a bit surprised. But I want to know what basis we signed this lad on, I suppose. No, he played okay against us. He didn't really catch my eye in the games he played for Hajduk Split. But it's a funny one with him, isn't it? Because we're never going to be able to judge him unless he plays a load of games. But he's never going to play a load of games if he plays him and he's really not that good. I was surprised.
And Brad, can you get inside Allardyce's head for me on this one, mate? Because I am puzzled by this.
Yeah, I was fairly surprised myself. I mean, I can understand why he dropped Bolasie, because he's been playing so many games and he's been in the starting line since he returned from injury. So I can understand why he dropped him, but I don't understand why he didn't play Luckman instead, because I think he's more of a playmaker than Vlasic. He has the ability to create chances. He actually has an urgency to create something, whereas Vlasic, I think, is still a bit... Still don't think he's adapted to the team yet, because he's only been here since the summer, whereas Luckman's been here for a whole year. So I think Luckman, although I think Luckman would have been better if he had some game time beforehand, like, he proved in the Liverpool game that he could create chances. I mean, he's the reason why, one of the main reasons why Guffey Sigson scored the equaliser. So I think Vlasic is a bit too surprising replacement for Bolasie, and I think Luckman would have been better.
And this is like become a bit of a meme now, I think, for us Evertonians. It's something probably I was moaning about, Brad, but oh God, probably under Martinez, and it's the two kind of defensive midfielders at home. Is that something that frustrates you, especially now, you know, we don't have them attacking fullbacks, so it's kind of like, why are we playing two defensive midfielders at home against a side like West Brom? Do you know what I'm saying, Brad?
Yeah, I think two defensive midfielders is too much. I mean, I still can't get my head on why Allardyce played three defensive midfielders against Bournemouth. I mean, it's Bournemouth, it's not like Manchester United or Liverpool or Man City, it was Bournemouth. I mean, playing three defensive midfielders against like Bournemouth, it's just not done. But yeah, two defensive midfielders, I think it's time for like a formation change, like for one defensive midfielder, or at least push like Idrissa Gueye up into the central role, maybe with someone like Klaassen or Rooney to support him, like an attack-minded central midfielder, just so that the wingers and someone up front, like whether it be Tosun or Calvert-Lewin, can have better support. Or one defensive midfielder and two strikers up front with both Tosun and Calvert-Lewin. Basically, I don't think two defensive midfielders is working out anymore. It needs to change.
Is that driving you mad as well, Dave?
It is now. I agree with, just going back to the previous point, I agree with Bradley there that I think Luckman is the better player out of Vlasic. But yeah, should, like you said there, do you really need to play two defensive midfielders against sides that are in the bottom half, or the bottom three? You know, it's
especially at home as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would also play Idrissa Gueye. I know Wayne Rooney has a value sort of in this. It's more of the midfield and a striker role that he plays now, anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
But rather than have two central midfielders, holding midfielders rather, I'd play two strikers at the same time. I mean, those boos that people hear, I know some people misinterpreted it as booing Tosun. They were actually booing the substitution, at least as far as I could see. It's not that we didn't want Knight and Nias on. It was more that, why is he taking the striker off? We need two strikers. It's not two defensive midfielders we need. It's two strikers, I think. And that's the formation change I would go with. And like we said, I think we said with Mikey last week, didn't we? It might be a bit football dinosaur. I would have thought of all managers who were not really bothered about that criticism would be Sam Allardyce. I would just go 4-4-2. Simple as that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. I mean, because he already has the tag anyway, which some people within the game think it's quite unfair. You know, he already has the tag of this dinosaur. So you're right. You know, why wouldn't he be adverse to just
what's
a
he
standard
got to lose
4-4-2?
By doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And how Bradley? I assume you know you were. If you were at the match, you obviously saw most of it. How bad were we with the ball? Did you know? Did Brad? I'll ask you, and then I'll come back to you, Grouch. Did you notice how, like, when we would the passing was bad in general, anyway. But there was this kind of this thing where we would fizz the ball in at like 300 miles per hour at lads' feet. There was a couple of times when it was played into Walcott like extremely quickly, and it was kind of like, what do you expect him to do with that, Brad? Did you notice how bad we were with the ball?
Yeah, but I think it's been quite a bit of a constant thing this season. I mean, it's just that we're not creative enough, we're not passionate enough. I mean, it's not really a surprise because, I mean, if in the Europa League qualifiers against Rouge and Baroque, you expected to be like not expected the team to gel so quickly, but I think now the team still isn't gelling, and we're in January, approaching February, so I honestly have no idea what's going on. There just doesn't seem to be a game plan at all. When Allardyce first took over, I thought, finally we have a game plan, but it's like we're back to where we were before Allardyce. Before now, I think at least under Koeman, at least we had a slight chance of creativity, whereas, as I mentioned before, as I tweeted before, before the West Brom game, we had four shots on target in the last five league games. And it's just, we're not creative enough at all. And if we're not creative enough, then there's nothing we could do, really, in order to be threatening.
You mentioned something there in terms of, you know, what kind of Allardyce is trying to do now. You would think a manager that's been around as long as he has would have a clear objective of where he wants the side to go and the identity of the side, you know, kind of like the DNA as they talk of. I probably, as you do, don't feel that he doesn't have any idea, but what he must have some idea is what I'm trying to say, but what would that idea be, in your opinion? If you could describe Sam Allardyce's, like, what he's trying to do with this Everton side to an alien, could you do it, Brad?
Probably not. Before surprises Everton, I mean, I think, to put it briefly, I think Sam Allardyce has to be just defensive because we can see there's so many goals before him. I think Sam Allardyce got a bit too defensive, we just got rid of the attack and threat completely. We just don't know where to begin to create an attack. And so isolated, for example, Tosin at the West Brom game, he didn't have a single touch in West Brom's penalty area. So just don't know what, as a whole, he's planning a part of the attacking side. But yeah, you see what's coming across on the defensive side, but on the attacking side, he's just created another problem.
Yeah. Grouch, if you were talking to somebody from Wolverhampton, an alien that was a little Staffordshire joke there. If you were talking to somebody, you know, how would you describe the way that he's going about things? You know what I mean? What is Allardyce trying to do? Because he must be trying to do something, but what is that?
I wonder is what he's trying to do and what the player's trying to do, two entirely different things. Looking at the team, it's almost, if you look at the team, he's not even telling them to pass to each other, you know, which I think is a bit harsh to criticise Allardyce for. If they can't even pass to each other properly, that's not exactly something he's telling them to not do, is it? It does look like they're a bit devoid of ideas. I would say a lot of that is down to the players, and it does beg the question of, is that the case with Koeman and Martinez before him, of the players being out of ideas, or have they just not been willing to take new managers' advice on? But to describe us at the moment, it's when he said we'd have to get more board, and he wasn't kidding, was he? That's exactly what we got.
You're dead right. It's just so frustrating at the moment. I mean, it was really, really bad. That was one of the least enjoyable matches I've had at Goodison for a while.
I thought we were a little bit better in the second half. Not by miles.
Did you? I've seen slightly. Other people say that, but I'm not sure.
I don't think it was a marked improvement. I just thought it was a slight improvement, really. Because the first half, the only word for it was turgid. In my mind,
I think individuals, you could probably point to individuals in the second half and say certain individuals had a better performance, but whether as a collective we did, I'm not too sure. But then with that said, Grouch, the first half I think was that bad. You know, it's probably, you're probably right, you know, we were probably 3% better in the second half.
In some ways, that first half I enjoyed the derbies a bit more than that, because we actually stood a chance and we're having a go. You know what I mean? Well, on Saturday first half, God knows, I don't think there was those ironic cheers, weren't there, when John Joe Kenny actually had a shot?
You know,
and when was that? That was almost at half time, wasn't it? Took us almost all the half to have a shot on target against the team next to bottom.
Brad, is that really counterproductive, the whole kind of fake cheering when we have a shot on target, or are you one of these supporters that, kind of believes that there's nothing wrong with that, and you need to let the players know when you're really disappointed with the application and the way they're playing.
Well, I'm not surprised with the ironic cheers. I mean, as I said before, 4 shots on target in 5 league games. I mean, that's just atrocious. I mean, that shot on target from Jonjo Kenny was the first time we had a shot on target in the first half of any game since the Swansea win. So over a month without a shot on target in the first half.
Jesus, sweat.
That's awful, isn't it?
Oh, God, this is why we got a stats man on, Grouch.
Yeah.
I came prepared.
You did. Sorry, carry on, Brad.
Yeah, it's just like I don't know what we're trying to do. I mean, we're just not creating anything in the first half just to kick us off. Whereas West Brom, 3 shots in the first 10 minutes, 2 of them on target. They had more shots on target in the opening 10 minutes than Everton had in the past 6 or 7 or so games in the first half. So, just don't understand what's going on. What's Sam Allardyce's approach when it comes to starting the game?
Yeah. In terms of those cheers, though, do you agree or disagree with them, or are you just ambivalent?
Yeah, I'm ambivalent. I neither agree or disagree. I just think I'm not surprised with everyone they cheers, because I think they were expected because of the chances we had on targets in the past few games.
Yeah, Grouch, Brad, we've spoken about the atmosphere in Goodison at length on this podcast, and we're going to do a special podcast dedicated to it. We're looking for the right person to come on and chat to us about that, because it's certainly something that I've been concerned about for a while, and I'm one of those guys who goes to the match and likes having a sing. I'll be honest with you. So, but Grouch, what's your thoughts on those ironic cheers? Because I've seen some people, you know, being quite critical and saying that type of behaviour from supporters, coupled with, you know, getting on lads' backs and the booing, it's just not productive, regardless of what we're seeing on the pitch.
I think I'm all for. I had any cheers. I actually had a little bit of a giggle on Saturday when those cheers were going on. You know, the crowd's got to let its feelings out, and I would say I had any cheers are infinitely better than booing anyway. Not that I'm against booing. I just think you got to boo at the right time. You know, I wouldn't boo our own players while the game's on. It's one thing doing it at half time after the whistle, or at full time if it warrants it. During the game, no, I'm not a fan of it. After the game, hey, if we've been awful, I think you've got every right to boo. But on the ironic cheers is just the sort of extension of that, maybe even a milder form. You know, you got to have a laugh, haven't you? And I think that's just the crowd's way of sort of gallows humour, if you like. So I don't see anything wrong with it myself.
I like the way that you said, you know, you've got to boo at the right time, as if, you know, you've got to plan your boos out. You know what I mean?
Don't use all your boo tickets up before the time. Yeah, keep your boo tickets for the right occasion.
You only get allocated a certain amount of boo tickets. We don't at Everton, though. We get allocated loads of them. We've earned.
Yeah, we've just got an abundance.
We've earned a lot of boos. I said to my old man just before half time, I said, "Do you think they'll boo?" And literally, like the half time whistle went, and everyone boo. Yeah. And I was like, "Right, it sounds looks like everyone will boo then."
Yeah.
Brad, I tell you what. In fact, actually, just quickly, lads, I really miss Gareth Barry. I'm sorry, I really missed him.
Yeah.
Especially, I think, alongside Schneidlin. I mean, not that Gareth Barry was excellent, but just because I loved Barry when he was at Everton. I really did. Brad, did you watch the match and think, oh God, there's a Gareth Barry shaped void in my heart, or not?
I think apart from Idris De Gea, he would have been the best defensive midfielder we'd have had if we still had him. He's certainly better than Morgan Schneiderlin. I think him and Gay would have improved us this season. So I don't understand why we signed him, because he's a leader, so he has the experience, whereas like Morgan Schneiderlin doesn't. I think his leadership at the centre of the pitch was missing. So it's not just been the West Brom game, it's been all season.
Yeah. How would you explain to an alien? There's a lot.
This week's theme.
Yeah. How would you explain to an alien, Brad, Morgan Schneiderlin's demise? And then we'll get your thoughts after, Grouch. Go on, Brad.
I don't know, really, because when he first joined Everton, he was really, really, really good. He started really well. He made an instant impact. But since about April and into the new season, the steep decline. It's like he's not bothered at all. And like last November, David Unsworth sent him and Moraes home from training. It's like, just not bothered at all, and he's proving that on the pitch.
Mm. Grouch, this is such a strange thing. I mean, I don't think I can recall a player that's descended into the abyss as quickly as Morgan Schneiderlin has from a height of, you know, lots and lots of praise from us Evertonians. Can you put your finger on it, mate?
No, I think the fact that he was compared to, or rather, you could directly compare them, couldn't you? He was sort of Gareth Barry's replacement at a cracking season. But then on Saturday, the older man basically ran the legs off the younger man. And we were saying for months, weren't we, oh, Gareth Barry's leg's gone, his pace is gone. I tell you what, I know which player I'd have rather had on Saturday. I'd have had Gareth Barry every single time. Like Bradley said just a minute ago then, you know, I don't know what silliness went on in just before Christmas when him and Morales were sent home. I mean, obviously, didn't one of them deny it? Didn't Morgan Schneiderlin deny
Morgan
it?
Morgan Schneiderlin denied it, yeah.
So Morales owned up to it. But perhaps maybe he was an innocent party and just got caught up with it. Who knows? We don't see what goes on at Finch Farm. One of the pair has been shown the exit door, probably overdue. And I wonder, is he just maybe fallen in with the wrong crowd, if you like? Maybe he's mixed with Morales, who might have been a negative influence. Might just be a case of getting him back on the right track. Only time will tell with that one. But for explaining his decline, who knows? Because he had six great months, didn't he? As soon as this season kicked off, like a different player.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Twitter trying to go with the theory that it was because Koeman had gone. I'm not too sure about that because his performances were poor when Koeman was still here, if I remember correctly. So I don't know if I buy that theory. Somebody, you know, talking about legs and somebody who does apply themselves fantastically well is Umar Nias. And Brad, are you a big fan of Umar Nias like me and Dave the Rave?
I admire his comeback because I think he's really, basically he's a cult hero now. I mean, that's his status cemented forever. I think the way he's been treated under Martinez and Koeman was a bit poor, really. I mean, when he first started, I thought he won't last long. He's poor. Why did we sign £13.5 million for him? But I think he answered his critics a bit. I mean, he's not a star player. I can't see him as like a first team player. I see him more of a super sub, really. But he definitely has his uses.
And do you enjoy his smile as much as me when he scores?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling, yeah. Brad, whenever I see him net. Yeah. But you're right.
You can tell in the smile how much Everton means to him. Like every goal he scores, I mean, he just gleams, really. So.
Yeah, you're right, he does. I frequently say to opposition supporters when we do a podcast, it's a lowdown special, Brad, with opposition supporters, you know, when we sign a player. So I've done one with two Arsenal boys on Theo last week. And what I say is, you know, the one thing that we ask of players at Everton, and I think it's really apparent at Everton, and I think it kind of seeps into the culture of the club, is that application and that desire. And, you know, you can be not the best footballer in the world, but if you give us that, then we'll give you a lot back. And you can point to plenty of examples of this down the years, you know, Strakulerzy being one that sticks out. I think Stephen Naismith, although Stephen Naismith was probably a better player than Nias and Strakulerzy, but you know, that's the thing with Nias, isn't it? It is that application, the fact that he is one of those, you know, everybody loves an underdog, and he came back from nowhere. Apparently Sam Allardyce has said now that he's going to stay until the end of the season. Grouch, are you happy about that, mate?
I suppose so. It's an extra attacker, isn't it? I mean, if we sold him and then Tosin gets an injury, you're back to square one, aren't you? It's probably common sense. We obviously need better, obviously. But the thing about it, I was saying to my dad yesterday, after we slate him because he's not good enough, and then he scores the equaliser. And I think he did the same thing against Crystal Palace early in the season,
yeah,
when he got banned for diving. You know, yeah, he's not the greatest player, but he just scored the odd important goal. Yeah. So it seems a little bit strange. You're in a strange position in where we're pulling a player to pieces. Although his attitude has been excellent on the football field, obviously skill-wise, we sort of slate him, and he's been a little bit of a comedy figure, hasn't he? But he scored a few decent goals that have got us points.
Yeah.
So I'm not conflicted. If he went, I've got to be honest, I wouldn't be sad to see him go, providing there was a better replacement brought in. I think to get rid of him without replacing him, like Brad says, I do agree that he's probably better as a substitute sort of impact player sort of thing. But yeah, if he's going to stay, I've got no problem with it. I just think he's not the long-term answer to our striking solution. But yeah, he scored on the odd goal.
So, Brad, you know, I apologies in advance for putting you on the spot, but I've actually come armed with some of your more NEAS statistics. I wondered if, in advance, if you wanted to give us yours, if you've got any off the top of your head, and I'll see if I've got one that you haven't got. What do you reckon?
Yeah, go on then. Well, there's one person on Twitter recently about him scoring the most goals as a substitute in a single season with Adrian Heath with 5 goals. So at least he's a small part of Everton history. So
that's
that's amazing.
That's a far better statistic than mine. For God's sake, Brad. Mine aren't even just like Everton linked, but I do like that you've included Adrian Heath. That's a great one. Mine are Umar Nias has gone.
He's a slightly better player,
Yeah, you'd think so. Umar Nias has scored 4 goals as a substitute in the Premier League this season. That's a joint high alongside Olivier Giroud and Anthony Martial. And then Nias scored just 56 seconds after coming off the bench, making the goal the fastest by a sub in the Premier League this season. I'll be honest with you, Brad. The level of my research there was the BBC website. So, Grouch, have you got an Umar Nias statistic? It doesn't have to be football related. It could be like he's really good at Cluedo or something.
Is he has size 13 and a half feet?
Does he?
No, I don't know. I'm not making that up.
No, I believe that. He's a big lad.
not off the top of my head, no, I haven't got anything.
Okay. Well, next time, that's your homework, all right?
Next week, I will find out the most obscure Umar Nias stats for you.
Yeah. Wolcott, now, lads, I'm going to be honest. I was really excited that we signed Theo Wolcott after I did the podcast last week. And I still kind of am. Like, I kind of look at Wolcott, and he's one of them lads that we signed, but I go, oh, he plays for Everton now. That's cool, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because he's always been... obviously, we've all known about Wolcott since he was 16, and I believe he's 28. So same age as me, and it's kind of like... I kind of map his life to mine, and I think, you know, when he was 16, he was going to the World Cup, and I was drinking White Lightning on the park. And, you know what I mean?
Wait till you're my age, and some of the younger Premiership managers are younger than you. Go on.
Are we at that stage now with you? Like Marco Silva? Marco Silva's younger than you, is he?
I'm not sure of his exact date of birth, but I can't be far off.
Okay, that is scary. Brad, how old are you, mate? You don't look very old.
I'm 22.
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. I was gonna say around that age. So you know, you might vaguely remember Wolcott at the World Cup. Do you remember that, Brad?
Vaguely. I remember him being called up, and there's a lot of hoo-ha about it. Rather than being 16, 17 when he was called up and not getting much experience. So I remember all of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, Brad, what are your thoughts on Theo Wolcott? Are you happy that he now plays in an Everton shirt?
Yeah, I think he's a good sign. I mean, me personally, I think he's an upgrade on Aaron Lennon. So I think he's a good replacement for him because he has pace. I mean, he has the ability to cross the ball. I mean, basically just, like I said, an upgrade on Aaron Lennon, really. So I have no complaints about the signing whatsoever.
Grouch, were you excited when you saw him holding up the Everton shirt? Were you like, yeah, Theo Wolcott's an Evertonian now. This is great. Or were you kind of not really arsed?
No, I think he's a good sign. I'm glad we've got him. I'm quite pleased. I've seen quite a few people say that about him, that he's an upgrade on Aaron Lennon. I love Aaron Lennon. I think we all do. I think everybody's got a soft spot for him, don't we? But let's be honest, Theo Wolcott is going to be a better player than. He's got pace. He's got 19 goals last season. you know, I'll have some of that. Definitely.
Yeah, he can't do it on his own, though. I think he needs a bit of help to, in order to score a few goals there.
True, yeah. I mean, also, is he a winger or is he a striker or is he both? You know, that's another question. I mean,
well, he thinks he's a striker.
Well, that's the thing. I would play him as a striker. And I would put Walcott and Tosin up front with Niasse ready to come on. And I'd do that 4-4-2. Balassi on one wing. You know, when Coleman's back, which isn't going to be far off, as we're led to believe, he's there. When someone gets around to getting the sewing kit out and knitting a left back for us, you know, then we'll have a left back. And I think once the team's set up properly, we've all said unbalanced, haven't we? I just think that would be ideal. 4-4-2, Tosin and Walcott. Walcott's already up to speed with the Premier League. Tosin's going to take a little bit of time because the Turkish League isn't, you know, in comparison to leagues, there isn't a comparison, is there? So it'll take him time to get up to speed. But two of them together, you know, they might benefit from each other.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. I thought he was okay, especially in the second half. I thought he was quite good and he got his assist as well, which was good for him. So we've probably got about 5-10 minutes left, lads. I just quickly want to talk about McCarthy because it was it was nasty. I sit in the lower Gladys Street, and I'll be honest with you, my experience of it was I didn't realise the severity of it straight away. So I was really angry with Morgan Schneiderlin, so I went to kind of bollock Schneiderlin after, you know, McCarthy made the challenge, and then I looked back and then I saw, you know, McCarthy's leg, and I realised that was terrible, and then obviously, you know, the reaction from the players around, and I don't think I've ever experienced anything like that in a football ground before. I've never seen anything like that at Goodison with an Everton player being injured that badly. I don't think, because obviously Coleman was away on international duty, wasn't he? And Oviedo was away in the cup when he did his. We've had a few of these now, but it was really, really terrible. Brad, how much do you feel for James McCarthy? Because he's a lad who has a lot of injury problems anyway, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a bit of an unfortunate player. I mean, I think he is a good player. I mean, when he's good, he's really good. But sometimes when he's poor, he's really poor. But I think he has bounced back from his injury since he came back at the Bournemouth game. He nothing really happened, but since then he has definitely improved. And the same that he had that injury because that tackle, if he hadn't had the injury, I mean, it was a brilliant last-ditch tackle. It saved us from being 2-0 down. I mean, that could have sparked something into McCarthy, like, developing even more and more and more. So
yeah.
It could have been contesting to be put in the first-team player. Like, him and Gay could have done well together if he hadn't had that injury.
Mm. And Groucho, I've seen some people laying the blame at Morgan Schneiderlin's feet. Now, look, here's the thing, Schneiderlin hasn't been good.
Oh, for giving it away. There's no way he's going to want someone to break his leg, is there?
Of course, I mean, not. How much responsibility does he have to take, in your opinion?
Of course. Who, Morgan Schneiderlin?
Yeah.
None. There's no way. No way he was going to know that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay, he gave the ball away. But I think that's where the criticism should end. There's no way he's going to wish a leg break on someone else. You know, I mean, look at that London fella as well. He's acted superbly, hasn't he, since?
Definitely.
You know, a lot of credit must go to him, yeah. It reminded me, actually, of a little bit of Seamus Coleman's, obviously, because that was an awful injury as well. But it reminded me of, I don't know if you two will remember, David Boost. You may not. Some of our younger listeners may not.
I'm familiar with the Boost injury. I think Peter Schmeichel.
Was that the Coventry one, lads?
Yes, it was Coventry, and Bradley's right. Peter Schmeichel took ill at the sight of it because the blood was everywhere. You could see the bone sticking through. You can Google it at your leisure. I'm sure the photos are around because they were all over.
I don't think leisure's the right word for it.
Maybe not leisure. Well, not unless you're a sick puppy like me. But yeah. But it reminded me of that. I mean, hopefully he'll be able to come back. I think he's had surgery today. But these things happen in football. He'll know the risks. It is very unfortunate for him, like you said before. He's just come back from an injury, hasn't he? Martin O'Neill will probably declare him fit for the next Ireland game. So he'll have to hurry up and get up to speed on that one, because he could be like a bilateral amputee, and you know Martin O'Neill would still pick him anyway. It's what can you do? You know, it's just unfortunate, isn't it? You know, he's going to be okay. His leg's probably set by now if he's had surgery. So it's a matter of recovering. He's only 27, isn't he? So once he does come back, he's probably still going to have, as long as everything goes okay, he's still going to have a decent career. I was thinking exactly what Bradley said before. Him and Gay would have been a good combination, I think. Although it would sort of be maybe two defensive midfielders. Maybe you could try that sort of Old Trafford away or something, not at home, but I think that would have been a good combination. May still be a good combination. We've just got to wait a little bit longer to find out. But yeah, poor sod. Hope he's okay. I'm sure he will be. But just one of them, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was horrific. It really wasn't very nice. And obviously, everybody at Grand Old Team wishes James a full and speedy recovery. Just quickly, lads, before we finish, I just want to pick your brains on. I'll go to you first, Bradley, and then to you, Groucho, again. Relegation. So Big Sam, as been quoted, I saw it picked up by on Twitter. I think it was on The Express or something. So I don't even know if it's true, because you know The Express isn't the most reliable news outlet around. However, you know that he was in there, and there were his comments apparently. So I assume they are what he said, and it's regarding relegation and you know the fact that Everton can still go down. Bradley, how worried are you that Everton might still get dragged into something quite painful this season?
Well, now I'm a lot less worried about relegation than I was a couple of months ago, because after the Southampton results, I thought, yeah, we're contenders. But then Sam Allardyce helped sort out the defence a bit, and he started again the results, so I think that helped that a bit. But even in spite of the poor form we're in now, I don't think relegation is on the cards. I think, well, we've got a couple of weeks until the Leicester game, so Sam Allardyce and the whole team needs to get a grip of things in order to make sure that Allardyce is wrong, basically. The players need to prove Allardyce, and Allardyce needs to prove himself wrong.
I think you're right. Groucho, are you worried that you hear Sam Allardyce talking like this again now?
No, I think he's trying to frighten the players, in that he thinks it. I don't think for a minute he thinks that's going to happen, but if he says that, I think the players might just need that boost up the backside, and it might just be that. I don't think he believes that. I don't think he believes that he's not going to try and sign a left back either. I think the days of believing everything the manager says on the media are gone. So, like Bradley says as well, I'm a lot more relieved now than I was when Ronald Koeman got sacked. I thought we were goners. After that Southampton game, I thought, now that's it, that's curtains. You know, but no, we're equally, I think we're 7 points off the bottom three, and is it 6 points? We're equally, I thought we're sort of equidistant between the bottom three and seventh or something, aren't we? So yeah. I think this is the fourth week on the run now. I've said, how are we still ninth? Mm. But we are, we find ourselves ninth. So, okay, the performances on the pitch aren't great at the minute, but we played awfully. We weren't very good and still got a point. So yeah. that must be something.
Yeah, it is really quite incredible to look at the league table. I've just got it up now. You've got Leicester on 34, they're in 7th. We've got Burnley on 34, they're in 8th. And then it's us down at 28, 9th. Watford are in 10th. And then I think everybody. I still think we need a couple of wins, to be honest, to pull ourselves away from that. Because, you know, it is, oh God, it's so tight, and it's a shame, really, because, you know, there was a couple of weeks ago when we were starting to look up, and we were starting to look at Burnley and thinking, well, they'll drop off at some point, you know, and it'll be down to us to capitalise on that. But now I think if you offered me ninth place now, I would probably take it, to be honest.
Bite your hand off of that.
Yeah, definitely, and just as we record this now, Swansea are 1-0 up against Liverpool, so we'll see if that stays the way it does.
Do you know, I might break the beers out after all, then, in that case.
Yeah, like you'll have earned a brew dog, Dave. Grouch, Bradley, That's too many names. Brad, where can people find you on Twitter and the EFC Stato thing, bud?
My EFC Stato is basically just at EFC underscore Stato when, if you want my personal Twitter account. If you want, just Bradley underscore Kate. Simple. Just very simple.
And are you going on Countdown anytime soon again, Brad?
No, I've been on twice before, and twice is the maximum I can go on, so... I'm an artisan now, so I can live with that.
I would hate to see myself on Countdown. I'd be utterly, utterly dreadful at it. Grouch, how do you reckon you get on at Countdown? You reckon you'd be all right?
Well, I could do the. I was rubbish at. I can't do anagrams. I'm last at them, so I couldn't do the conundrum. Maths has never been me strongest point. But the actual main body of the game, which is the how many. What's the longest word you can make out of these? Wasn't bad. I could usually get 6 or 7.
Right.
On the other occasion, go for an 8.
Brad's
of course, yeah.
He'd
eat his breakfast on that without a doubt. I watched your clip actually the other day. when you, I think the fella got the maths question right, and you went, "Oh, but there's an easier way of doing it than that." And Carol Vordham just went, "Yeah, there you go." So I'm in awe of that.
I'll have to go and check that out on YouTube, Brad. You'll make me feel.
I was 11 then.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
he was 11. You were 11 well. Then. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm going to go check this out and feel incredibly dumb.
I should point out, Adam, it wasn't the kids' version of Countdown. He was an 11-year-old holding his own against the adults.
Brad, much respect, mate. And thank you for coming on to the Grand Old Team podcast. We really appreciate it. And we'll do this again sometime.
No problem. Pleasure to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
See you next time then on the Grand Old Team podcast. It's a grand old team. It's a grand old team to support. And if you know your history, it's enough to make your heart go.